It's time to turn to the WUKY Sports page with your host, Keith Elkins, revealing conversations and stories you thought you knew from prominent Kentucky sports figures. Now, here once again is Keith Elkins.
Rodney Woods is with us today. He was recently inducted into the Kentucky High School Basketball Hall of Fame. That's just the latest of many honors. Among the others, he is a member of the National High School Athletic Coaches Association Hall of Fame. He was a basketball star at Lone Jack High School in Bell County and was recruited to the University of Tennessee, where he played for Coach Ray Mears in what would be called the point guard position today. And though he was still a very effective scorer, he led the SEC in assists in each of his 3 years at Tennessee. He's coached boys basketball at Wayne County since the 1986-87 season, has taken the team to 9 appearances in the Sweet 16, including a state runner-up finish in 1989, has over 900 wins in his high school coaching career. Rodney, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
You're getting ready for another school year, another season at Wayne County, and of course everything's just a little bit different these last couple of years with COVID, but what is this time of year like for you here in the late summer?
Well, it's always exciting when it's getting close to time for practice, and I keep saying, people ask how long I'm going to do this. I've been doing it 40-some years now overall, and I always say that first day I wake up and dread going to practice, that'll be when I give it up. But I still look forward to it each day and enjoy it and having a good time.
Yeah, that absolutely has to be there, doesn't it? Because a coach has to be so committed to his athletes and his program and his sport, and it's just something that has to be in there in order for you to be successful, doesn't it?
Yes, and unlike some, every once in a while, you know, you got players that they don't care much about practice, but they love the games. As a coach, you got to love the practices more than you do the games, I think. And so I look forward to that each time we get to go in the gym. It's a chance for guys to get better, and I really enjoy that.
Well, I want to come back to your coaching career in a few minutes, but let's go back to your growing up in Four Mile, Kentucky in Bell County. Tell me about the community there and how you developed your interest in basketball there.
Well, it was just it was kind of like it is for the whole state. It was kind of a way of life, and I grew up in a family that loved basketball. My dad played, and he played at Lone Jack. And was on an undefeated team in high school that lost in the regional semifinals to Clay County. Clay County's disappointed a lot of teams in that region over the years.
Yes.
even back in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
but I know my dad always told me that we beat Clay County at Clay County when I was a junior. And then we played them again in the regional semifinals at Union College, and we beat them again. And he told me after the game that night, he said he'd been waiting on that night ever since he played. But I grew up, had a first cousin play for Kentucky, Bobby Slusher, played in 19, Bob went there in 1957, and he was a freshman with Billy Ray Lickert in that group. And Larry Percival, who played at Kentucky in the 60s, early 60s, I always thought it was interesting that our school, when I was in school, we had 140 students in 9 through 12. And at that little school, there were 3 of us came from there who played in the SEC in a span of 11 years, and we all 3 lived within about 150 yards of each other.
Wow.
And I always thought that was interesting to come from such a small place and have 3 guys that were able to play in the Southeastern Conference. But I grew up a huge Kentucky fan. Always wanted to play for Kentucky. I visited UK in December of 1970 and stayed at the Campbell House. And after the game that Saturday night, I think Kentucky played Auburn, and after the game was over, Jimmy Dan Connor was visiting that weekend, and Coach Hall took us over to his home for a little get-together with some of the other players following the game that night. then back to the Campbell house, and the next morning Dickie Parsons knocked on my door and took me downstairs and to this back room, and the restaurant there was closed off, and it was just me and Coach Rupp for breakfast.
Wow.
And we talked about basketball and recruiting and what, you know, what I wanted to do. And I always laughed about what he told me. He had been to 4 Mile, of course, because he had signed Bobby Slusher and Larry Percival, and he knew, you know, he knew a little bit about the community. And of course his health was failing at that time. And he looked at me and he said, I've heard a lot about you. And you know, Coach Parsons, Coach Hall have told me a lot about you as a player. He said, unfortunately, I'm not going to get to see you play because I'm not healthy enough to ride that far in a car, and they can't land a plane in 4 Miles, so I won't be there to see you. I'd always wanted to play for Coach Rupp, but in the meantime, Kentucky came and watched me play twice. Coach Hall came, and the Tennessee coaches had a coach there, either Coach Mears, Coach Aberdeen, or Coach A.W. Davis. They had a coach there to see me play 17 consecutive games. Mm-hmm. And Coach Mears came into my home after a game one night and sat down and looked at me, and he said, I'll promise you two things if you'll come to Tennessee. Number one, he said, you'll start every game you're there unless you're hurt. He said, we believe in you that much, and we don't believe that we can find anybody that can, you know, play the way that we want our point guard to play. And the second thing was, he said, I know you like to play fast. And he said, if you'll come to Tennessee, we'll lead the SEC in scoring. He said, that's how fast we'll play. And both those promises came true. We led the league in scoring all 3 years I was at Tennessee, and I started every game but one. I had broke a finger right before we were getting ready to open the season my junior year and had to have surgery, and so I didn't get to start the first opening game of the season, but we were losing at halftime, and I told the orthopedic doctor, Dr. Bill Yeomans, I said, Doc, I can play the second half. He said, no, we're not going to let you play. And I said, I can play. I promise you I can play. So he took me out in the hallway of Stokely there, of the locker room, and the team had already went back on the court to warm up for the second half and threw me some passes, and I was catching it and acting like it wasn't hurting, but it didn't feel real good.
Mm-hmm.
And so he went back up to the bench and walked back behind and whispered to Coach Mears, I could play if he needed me. So Coach put me in immediately, and I finished the second half. We came back and won that game. But Coach Mears, I think, was one of the greatest coaches ever. I don't think he'll ever get the credit that he's due because of the way things were then, where only the SEC champion went to the NCAA tournament.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And in his 13 years or 14, I don't remember exactly, 13 or 14 years, I don't think he ever finished below third place in the SEC. Had the rules been like that, he would have made it every single year he was there.
Oh, yes, yeah. I was going to ask you about Ray Mears, of course. He was well-known to fans all around the country, and particularly in the Southeastern Conference, and particularly here in Lexington and Kentucky because of the intense rivalry between Kentucky and Tennessee at that time. That's continued through the years, but especially then, long before the Kentucky-Louisville series. Tell me about Ray Mears as a coach day-to-day, because as fans, we'd see him bring his teams into Memorial Coliseum. I was there as a student to watch those games, and they'd have the guy on the unicycle during the warm-up. So he had a showman element to him, but he was a very successful coach, so obviously he could get down to business when it was time. What made him so successful?
I think he was just so competitive. I've never been around a person that intense, just extremely intense person, on and off the court. He was hard to get to know. I know, I think you might remember Billy Justice, who played for Tennessee.
Yes.
Billy told me one time after I was through playing, he said, I don't think any player ever got as close to Coach Mears as you did. He said, you were able to get him to do some things that no other player was able to ever do, to change some things there. And coach was just an intense competitor. I think he was ahead of his time. We were shooting way behind what is a 3-point line now, long before, mm-hmm. long before the 3-point line came along. And that was off the fast break. The thing that amazed me about him the most, I thought he had a greater understanding than anyone I was ever around about spacing on the offensive end of the court. Hubie Brown always says that offense is spacing and spacing is offense. And I thought Coach Mears understood that better than anybody I've ever been around. He was able to isolate players like Bernard King, Ernie Grunfeld. He just made it so tough for you to double-team those guys. He had such an understanding of spacing that just made him an outstanding coach. And the thing about him, too, people that, you know, the older generation, they remember Coach Mears for, you know, his scores of winning 42-38. Playing such a slow down game and then to change from that to have one of the most explosive offenses in the country to be at the top in scoring. He just really understood offense I know when we came to Kentucky, it was certainly always intense when he came in there because he had a way of, you know, his little deal at Vanderbilt where the SEC made him stop bringing us in and walking completely around the court while the freshman game would be going on, and they were pelting us with oranges and everything. And he just had a way of getting his teams ready to go. And believe it or not, he was a huge fan of Coach Rupp. He loved Coach Rupp. I don't think people realize that those two guys had a tremendous friendship off the court. And now he and Coach Hall didn't get along, but he and Coach Rupp did. In his home, he had numerous pictures of he and Coach Rupp standing together talking. And he told me stories about Coach Rupp being on recruiting trips and maybe had a change over in Knoxville at the airport and a snow came up and flights canceled, and Coach Rupp would call and spend the night with him instead of a hotel. And I think that was kind of misguided, that he and Coach Rupp didn't like each other. They were fierce competitors on the court, but off the court, they really got along well.
Well, you mentioned the commitment that he made to you about starting the games and about playing a faster game during the time that you were there. We mentioned that you led the SEC in assists per game all 3 years that you played at Tennessee. But like a lot of college players, you're a star in high school, and you had some incredible numbers at Lone Jack High School and had a couple of 50-point games. You had to adjust to being dealing out the assists to people like Ernie Grunfeld and Bernard King, though you were still scoring. It's not like you gave it up completely, but they were the guys who were counted on as far as most of the point production, and you dished out a lot of the assists. Was that any difficulty at all in adjusting to that, or was the fact that Coach Mears kept his commitment, was that good enough to make you trust everything that he was going to do?
No, you know, I never did really change. I know a lot of people felt like that it was a huge adjustment or whatever, but I just played basketball. I never really thought about it that much. I remember Coach Aberdeen, the assistant there. I remember him coming and sitting down by me in the locker room when I was a freshman, when we had the freshman games, and we're at Georgia. It was our second game and my first road game as a college player. Comes over and sits down by me, and he says, now, it's not going to be like high school. You're not going to score all these points, you know, and all this stuff and everything. Well, I go out and I get 33 in the first road game, you know, as a freshman. But I never did pay much attention to that. Another interesting story, we're playing St. John's. This is my first year to get to play at the varsity level. Of course, you know, freshmen freshman couldn't play until I think 1970 would have been my junior year, 1974. And but in 73, we're playing St. John's in Madison Square Garden. We're losing by one. There's like 12, 14 seconds, maybe less, in the game. There's a timeout, and there's a play set up for Mike Edwards, who was a great shooter on our team. And so when we go back out, you know, when we start to play, it's just like the pearly gates open up, and all of a sudden I'm wide open from just inside the top of the arc, and I take the jump shot and miss and lose. We lose the game by one. And so, you know, Coach Aberdeen's getting after me pretty good after the game, and it just kind of went in one ear and out the other, because I was thinking, I'm a basketball player. I'm not gonna pass up a wide open shot like that, you know, to force one to somebody. So a few weeks later in January, we're playing Kentucky, my first time to ever play against them. And pretty much the same thing happens. There's just a few seconds left in the game, and the play set up for Mike Edwards. It was a play that we call circle. We go back out, same thing happens again. And I shot it, and I made it that time. And Kentucky ends up getting a shot off late in the game, Jim Andrews. And doesn't go in. We win by 1 point. So, you know, I never treated it any differently. And another thing that was kind of interesting, people think, you know, and I think you said it right, I did score some. But it's not that many, but this year I was listening to a pregame show for Tennessee getting ready to play, and they have a little deal there where they have a trivia question and somebody wins, whatever. And the trivia question was, who holds the record at Tennessee for the most double-doubles in points and assists? And I didn't realize, and somebody called in, and I think the call-in was for that Jordan Bone did. Ended up being wrong, and I still hold the record for that.
Yeah.
So that's 40-some years later.
Yeah, that's some staying power there with that. I was going to ask you about, of course, we mentioned the names of Ernie Grunfeld and Bernard King, the Ernie and Bernie show, as it was known in college basketball at that time. They were a big part of Tennessee basketball in the early to mid-70s. And for those who don't remember, could you give me a brief description of each and what made them so good and how things fit together for you and them at Tennessee?
Oh, gee, we could spend the whole day talking about those two guys. They were something else. Of course, Ernie came in as a freshman in 74, Bernard in 75, and we had our pickup games, not like today where these coaches are able to work with these guys year-round, which I think is great. But, you know, in that time, practice was October 15th, and coaches weren't allowed in the gym, you know, in the summer or when school started. So we had our pickup games, and I'm sure the coaches were hid behind a door somewhere, peeping in, watching. But it was just amazing to watch, because those two guys were so competitive. We could never let them be on the same team in a pickup game, because nobody else would ever had a chance. But our pickup games were just super intense, because those guys hated to lose. And coming from New York, they were used to playing on the outdoor courts where there were, you know, 50, 60 guys probably playing. So if you lost, it might be 2 hours before you got to play again.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys were just extremely competitive. And we probably had to separate them a time or two, because they both hated to lose. And great players, very different players. I think Bernard King's the best basketball player I was ever around, that I ever saw play. Especially on the offensive end. Don't think I've ever seen anything close to what he was like. Great example was our first road game. His first road game was the second game of the season that year, his freshman year at Michigan, when they were in the top five in the country with guys like Steve Grody, Joe Johnson, CJ Kupek, and we lose in overtime, and he scores like 38. And that was what he was like, and it was every day. Another great example of how special he was and how gifted he was. In 75, we had played at Auburn, and I was struggling with I'd had a broken ankle from the year before, and was in baseball, and was really struggling at that time in the season. I was actually taking xylocaine injections in the joint, in the ankle joint, before and halftime to numb it to get to play the games. And Bernard had later found out we called it torn cartilage at the time. He had a torn meniscus and was playing through the season with that. And we came back from Auburn flew back on a Monday night, and on Tuesday morning, Coach Mears called he and I in and told us that we weren't going to practice all week, but we were going to play on Saturday night against Kentucky. And so I go to practice every day. Bernard never shows up a day, never saw him. I was there sitting and watching every day, single day, and holding a basketball, at least had one in my hands a little bit. And we play on Saturday night, and that's the first time we've seen him now since Monday or Tuesday. And he walks in and just dominates the game, and we win the game 103-98. And that was against Roby Phillips and Kevin Greavy and Jimmy Dan and Mike Flynn and that group, and Bob Guyette. And just walks in there and plays and puts up, you know, 30 points, 20 rebounds, and just an amazing athlete. Larry Bird, in Larry Bird's book, he says that Michael Jordan's the best basketball player that he ever saw, but he said that Bernard King was the best offensive player that he ever saw.
Wow.
And Bernard King was special.
He really was, and that was a great era in college basketball, too. Lots of exciting games like the one you mentioned, exciting high-scoring games like the one you were talking about there. And those happened frequently. I was going to ask you again on the subject of offense here. At 5'11", you were able to, what would be described now as create your shot. You didn't necessarily need someone to set you a screen or open you up in some way, but I remember watching some old film here just recently, and you're able to make some moves there along the top of the key and get your jump shot off. That, I guess, goes way back probably to when you first started playing basketball. But what's the key in doing that?
Well, Coach Mears was a great teacher of one-on-one. And it goes back to what I was talking about earlier about spacing. And we didn't set screens for Ernie Grunfeld, didn't set screens for me or Mike Jackson or Bernard King. And that went back to spacing, because when you set screens, then you got a great chance. It becomes congested and a great chance to double the basketball. And so we spent a lot of time working one-on-one moves in practice and just every day. It was, we had 30 minutes. We had 30 minutes of just offensive moves like that, working one-on-one. And I think that had a lot to do with it. And then a lot of it, too, just being basketball players. And I played on the even though I was in Kentucky and not in New York City, I played on the outdoor courts probably more than Bernard and Ernie did. Mm-hmm. And I grew up playing on the outdoor courts mostly in Middlesboro. My dad would come in from work. He worked for Kentucky Utilities for 47 years, and he would come in from work, and we would eat supper, and we would drive to Middlesboro, and we would play when I was like sixth grade, and we would play on the outdoor courts by the Little League field and by the airport in Middlesboro. Mm-hmm. And just tremendous games out there all the time. He would always get me on his team, because nobody was going to pick a sixth grader on their team to play against the guys that were there. And so I learned playing against older guys like that, guys like Greg Page, who played football at Kentucky and had the tragic accident. And I knew Greg, and I played against his brother Birchie and Mel, who went on and played at Tennessee Martin, and a lot of guys in Middlesboro that were really good players at that time, Rodney Buckner, Hank Barnes, guys like that. And those guys were all 4 and 5 years older than me or more, but still learned playing against guys like that. And so I've I lived on the outdoor courts playing pickup games, and that's when you get in a lot of one-on-one when you're in those games.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. When you graduated from Tennessee, you began your coaching career at Claiborne County High School in Tennessee, which is not far from Middlesboro and Bell County. But were you certain at that point that you wanted to go into coaching and at least give it your best shot, or was it an opportunity that just sort of came up? What was your thinking at that point?
Well, I was my first paid job in coaching. I was an assistant at LMU. That was my first paid job, and I was only there 1 year. And I hated the recruiting part. I didn't like it at all. I wanted to be on the court. I wanted to be coaching, and I was in Claiborne County, but my first job was at Powell Valley High School, which was part of Claiborne County school system.
Right.
There was Claiborne County High School, there was Powell Valley and Forge Ridge. There were three schools in that system at that time. And so I'd always knew I wanted to coach. Coach Mears knew that. I think that's probably goes back to what Billy Justice told me. I think Coach got closer to me, or I got closer to him, because he knew I wanted to coach. And he was always talking to me about things in coaching. And I remember one thing in particular. We're at Auburn on a Sunday. It was that same year that I was talking about when we came back and he kept Bernard out of practice. But on the Sunday night before we played on Monday at Auburn, I was shooting extra after practice that night at the Coliseum there at Auburn. And he's rebounding for me, and he'd never done that before. He usually went in when everybody else went in. And so he's rebounding, throwing them back to me, and I'm shooting. The ball bounces out in the corner, and he picks it up and shoots it. And now I've been there 4 years. I've never seen him shoot a basketball. Mm-hmm. And so I said, Coach, I've never seen you shoot one before. And he said, well, I did that on purpose. And I said, why is that? And he said, I know how bad you want to coach someday. And he said, I'm just telling you right now, don't ever play pickup games with your players. Don't ever play horse with them. He said, they mistake kindness for weakness, and you've got to keep your distance as a coach. And he said, that's the only way that you can ever have the respect and to be able to control your team the way you need to. And so to this day, I've never played horse. I've never played pickup games with my players. And my players kind of, if my players want to come in my office and see me, they knock on the door. They don't just walk in. And so I think he gave me some great lessons about coaching, and I always knew that I wanted to. And I had my chances with college, but I like being on the court all the time. I don't like all the other stuff that goes along with college coaching.
Right. Now, you started coaching, as you mentioned, at Wayne County in the 86-87 season. What drew you to that job? What made you think that was going to be a good situation for you at that time?
Well, it was kind of wild how everything happened. I was coaching in Tennessee, and then I went to Corbin, and I was there for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And then I went back to Tennessee. So I played a lot of slow pitch softball. In fact, Billy Hicks and I have coached Scott County for so long. Billy and I played together for 10 summers. We played for a guy in Pineville, Dr. Raider, and we played for a team called Doc's Raiders and had a lot of success. And so I was able to, when that team kind of broke up, I was able to move on and play on at a bigger level. So I was playing for a team in Knoxville, and a guy by the name of Hank Bassett, who was from Monticello, called me and asked me to play for a team called Kentucky Softball, who had some guys on it. In fact, our lieutenant governor, her dad, Jack Coleman, Jack was on that team. So played with Jack and a bunch of other guys from Lexington area, and played for him. So the job came open here, and he lived here, of course, and he called and asked if I would talk to the superintendent, if I'd be interested. And I said, sure, I like where I'm at, but I'll be happy to talk to him. So I came into Monticello one weekend and met with the superintendent, and we talked about it and decided to give it a shot. And I've been here now. I think this is 36 years I've been here. So But that's kind of how it happened.
And it's been an amazing tenure, and we've pointed out some of the many accomplishments there at Wayne County. You mentioned the relationships with players and not doing something like playing pickup games with them as they play. But, of course, now you've had a generation or two of players who have become alumni. And now that they're former players and on their own and families and other kids coming through the program, what's your relationship with former players? That usually is something that's rewarding to a coach or a teacher when they have a good relationship with former students. What's that been like?
Yeah, it's really fun and been great. And like you said, now I'm coaching some of those guys. I'm coaching their sons. Mm-hmm. I've had a couple of them. Some have already graduated, but one in particular I'm coaching right now, one of our greatest players ever at Wayne County, was David Phillips, who played at Chattanooga. And I have his son, Kendall. And Kendall started every game for us last year as an eighth grader and averaged 14 points a game. And with the new law that was passed for the kids to have a chance to repeat because they really didn't get to go to school last year, Kendall's repeating, so he's going to be an eighth grader again. And he was young. He had never stayed back, so he's a kid that's taking advantage of that, and I'm going to have him for 6 years on the varsity.
Wow.
kind of unusual.
Yeah.
But he averaged 14 as an eighth grader, had some great games last year. In fact, we beat Knox Central, who won the 13th region and went to the state tournament last year, and he had 33 in a game against them as an eighth grader. So pretty going to be a pretty special player, I think. But just really, really good relationships, much different than when they played for me. Some of those guys, a few of those here and there, call me by my first name now. So that's been a little different, but just a really good, relationship with guys that played that were successful. And it's been a good run here. I don't know how much longer I'll do it, but certainly right now I plan on doing it for a while, and unless my health fails or I get to the point to where when it gets to be like a job, then I'll give it up. But right now it's still just like as a player. I still enjoy going every day.
Well, I want to ask you one final question. Of course, one reflection of your success in that tenure is that the gym and the basketball court are named in your honor. And I would think that would have to be just a really meaningful experience. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, it's different. I was really surprised when the superintendent called me in and told me what he was going to do and to name the, I guess it wouldn't have shocked me big time had he said he was going to name, the court after me or something like that. But to name the gym and the court, that was unusual, and it was had a great day that day, the day they did it, because I had a lot of my former players, a lot of players that played for me in Tennessee came, and we had a game that afternoon. And of course, I think there were over 100 players total that were here. So that was good to see. I probably enjoyed that as much as I did them naming the gym after me, getting to see those guys, because I try to do things and bring those guys back as much as we can and stay in touch with them. We've got a player that played here that's 96 years old that lives in Louisville, one of the greatest players that played here. I stay in touch with him all the time. And so just try to keep those guys involved as much as we can. It's certainly a great honor. And one thing I'd like to say real quick,
sure,
that's happened during this, all this, of course, I was really bitter. I didn't end up at Kentucky. That's where I always wanted to play. As a young guy, you say some stupid things. I remember saying after the first time I played against Kentucky and we beat them, I don't remember if it was a Herald or the Courier, but one of those in the locker room. That was back in the days when they walked in the locker room when you didn't have any clothes on and sat down by you and started interviewing you,
Right, right.
And one of them asked me something. He said, "Coach Hall said the reason they didn't take you was because they already had a guard your size, and one of you guys were going to be unhappy. And I said, well, I'm glad I'm playing for a guy that's more worried about winning than worried about who's going to be happy or not. Mm. And so, but what I was going to say about that was, after that was over and everything, and after through playing, Coach Hall has just been great to me as a coach. And he called me one time and he told me, he said, the biggest mistake I ever made was not signing you at Kentucky. And he sent me things along. He sent me prints. He sent me notes every time, almost every time, until his health got bad. Almost every time my team played in Lexington, he came to the game, just about every time. And in 2017, when I coached the Kentucky All-Stars against Indiana and the game was in Frankfort, he came to the game and sat behind the bench. And so he's become a special friend, and I always wanted to play at Kentucky, but it worked out the way that it probably should have for me as a player. Ended up having success at Tennessee, and Kentucky had success under Coach Hall. And there's another guy like Coach Mears. There's another guy that'll never be recognized for all the things that he accomplished like he should have had he coached in this day and age. And with ESPN and everything, had it been like that back then, that would have been two of the most talked about coaches in the country.
Well, and I think you're right on that. That's great that you've been able to see those relationships evolve over the years, from how you felt at the time as a college player to then as a coach, and then sort of reestablishing that relationship with Coach Hall and putting him in that category with Coach Mears. That obviously is something that that means a lot now, and one of those things that, again, that changes as we age and mature a little bit and see things from a different perspective.
Yeah, there's probably a reason a lot of these coaches don't like putting a microphone in front of players after games.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
say things a lot of times that you regret when you're that young.
Well, we certainly appreciate your time today. Rodney Woods has been with us, former Tennessee star, and of course a great at Lone Jack High School in Bell County, and then on to just a tremendous coaching career at Wayne County High School, inducted recently into the Kentucky High School Basketball Hall of Fame, member of the National High School Athletic Coaches Association Hall of Fame. Rodney, congratulations on a wonderful career that is far from over, but we again appreciate your time today to sit down and talk with us about it.
Thank you. Great to talk with you.
You've been listening to The Sports Page with Keith Elkins, an exclusive podcast from 91.3 WUKY, produced by Alan Lytle. Our theme music is Peanut Butter and Jam by Illogical Bit, available at soundcloud.com/illogicalbit. Subscribe to The Sports Page through Google Play or at our website, wuky.org.